Welcome to Leadership Reimagined, Episode 3, Design Thinking in Leadership with Andres Jordan, CEO of Factor 6. During each episode, we look at leadership from the vantage point of what it's going to take for leaders to lead their organizations forward into a new future. Today, Andres and I have a conversation on how to maximize the use of design thinking as a leader. I'm Dr. Jane Lovis, your host. Andre, if you want to introduce yourself real quick for folks here.
Sure, yeah. So my name is Andres Jordan. I have my own consulting firm, advising companies on design thinking and innovation strategies. I have a 30 plus years designing basically innovation ecosystems across multiple cultures, including working abroad and working with Chinese culture, German culture, and others. So fascinating subject, and I'm a big promoter of design thinking.
Great. Thank you. Thank you for that. Yeah. And today we're having a conversation on reimagining leadership and coming out of COVID. We've had some changes during quarantine on leadership, and coming out, there's going to be a lot more changes in how really to be a effective, powerful leader. And Andre and I have been having some conversations about that, and I wanted to record it so that we could share it with everyone on some of the things that we talked about design thinking and how we can use that to move forward in creating CEOs that are really powerful leaders that have a vision and have a direction to go. Is we don't know how things are going to change, but what we do know is things have really started changing. And we can either be at the effect of those changes, or we can create what we want for our companies.
Yes. Very well said.
So, Andres, you want to just give a little bit more background around design thinking for anybody that's not real familiar with it?
Sure. So let's do that. That's a good level set. So design thinking is a... Basically, it's a term that can lead to some confusion in people, right? And it's basically a mindset. It's basically a development of a mindset that comes from utilizing a very specific methodology to come up with new ideas, generate new products, and basically launch new products. So this was made famous. It was made famous out of Silicon Valley. It came out of Stanford. Apple is one of the first companies to really deploy design thinking to build their Macintosh and the Apple mouse. All this comes from what they call human-centered design. So basically, what design thinking does, the best way to think about this is every single thing in the world is a design. And I know that sounds almost like a spiritual thing, but it's true. Humans are a design. Our houses are a design, our cars are basically specific design. The way, when we eat breakfast, the dishes are a design, the glasses are designed. So if you think of it that way, if you think about design thinking and finding innovation, the innovation and the way to agility is in understanding those intersections of all those designs. So when you interact with a car, there's immense potential there for innovation, right? When you analyze that interaction via human-centered strategies like contextual inquiry, like basically pure observation, observing someone, take pictures of how they're interacting. It gives rise, an observing with no judgment, by the way, that's very important. An observing with empathy. An empathy not in the sense of, love each other empathy, but empathy in the sense of really, really feeling for what that person's going through when they're opening a door in a car, for example, right? So that's design thinking. I find that that's the best way to describe it in terms of, you know, making people understand that we have all these designs that we interact with. You think about all the interactions we have every single day, right? With multiple designs, and every one of those interactions is an opportunity to come up with a better way to improve life. So that's a bit of a lengthy way, but I need it, you need to give it some context. So that's what design thinking is.
Right.
Yeah.
And what I'm interested in right at this moment is so there's the possibility for design thinking for new products that we're going to need coming out of this. But also, how could we use design thinking as leaders, as CEOs, as to how we lead our organizations?
Exactly. Great question. And this is something that, you know, I've been doing innovation management and design thinking for many years, right? 10, 15 years now. You know, my career is about 30 years, but half of it has been, I mean, my entire career has been really creating new things and working in the internet space. But in particular, the last 15 years, I've been using these methodologies to really started initially with this idea of creating products. But what happens is as you start deploying this thinking, it starts changing people. It starts changing leaders, and leaders start becoming more aware. Why? It's very simple. Why? Because leaders realize that, you know, I need to balance away my mercantile mind, right? I mean, a lot of us go to MBA school and then teach us about profit margins and analytics to run better, you know, to run, you know, better markets and all these things. But I think a lot of MBA programs are leaving behind some of these, and some of them are teaching design thinking, by the way, now. So in a way, design thinking, because it uses all these human-centered ideas, right? Specifically, how to be more empathetic, how to listen, how to observe, and most importantly, how to leverage the creativity of your own employees to solve problems. And that is a very critical piece of the equation. How to leverage that creativity from all your employees to solve problems. When CEOs and executives start seeing the benefits of this, they start having a new awareness. You know, the awareness is, you know, I need to balance a little bit of my leadership style to be more considerate of people's creativity, and how do I enable their creativity? How do I, how do I nurture the creativity in my company to be able to tap into that energy, right? And by the way, when they do tap into that energy, engagement, I mean, the data is all there. Mm-hmm. Engagement goes up. So that is, and there's many examples of this. SAP, you know, a lot of companies, the CEO of SAP is a huge design thinker, and he instituted design thinking in his entire company, not just for product, for everything, you know, how to redesign systems, you know, internally. So that is where the beauty of design thinking has come in, is that it actually starts changing leaders into being more, call it empathetic.
Mm. And I see that one of the things, another area where it really calls to leadership is vulnerability.
Yes.
Because you can't be, and you don't want to be the smartest person in the room.
Absolutely correct. In fact, you're not.
Right.
You're equal, right? So the beauty of it, absolutely right. The beauty of, and when you run these design thinking workshops, it's very critical to have a level set. Everybody, you know, everybody in that enters in a brainstorming session is an equal power and equal value, right? And one of the tricks people do is, because there's a lot of neuroscience to this, by the way, is, you know, one of the things you do is you literally have a physical way to make sure that from the CEO to, you know, the product manager, or even to the office, whatever, you know, all levels, wear a t-shirt, right? And that puts you in a frame of mind, the same t-shirt, the same color, puts you in a frame of mind that we are all equal here and there is no wrong answer, right? And that is absolutely, is difficult for some people, especially people in power, that have the power to do that. But absolutely right. You gotta deal with a vulnerability, and accept it as a way to make, to solve problems faster, because that's what design thinking does.
Because you really, everybody has something unique.
Exactly.
And if they don't feel safe in saying it, or they're marginalized or not allowed to speak, you don't know what you're missing.
Very well said. Absolutely. Yep. Exactly. The key here, one of the other keys, there's a lot of key words for design thinking, right? You have empathy, you have observation, you have all these things. But one of the most important is diversity. And it's diversity. And the interesting thing on diversity, I mean, there's all kinds of research on diversity. Harvard Business Review, everybody's done research on diversity. And it's a proven fact now, beyond any doubt, that the more diverse minds you have, the better your results, the better you reduce risk, right? But the key here is that the piece that is very critical is diverse minds that have had different life experiences.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a very, very critical piece of the equation. I mean, it's amazing the stories you hear of people that had nothing to do with a specific business at hand. They were invited to brainstorm and they come up with amazing ideas. So that's the other piece of the equation. Sometimes you need somebody that's what they call the beginner. So you bring a beginner that is not exactly an executive from your company that understands your company 120%. And those people sometimes come in with a fresh perspective and they say, wow, how come you're not doing this? Or, you should do this. Tons of examples along those lines, which are fascinating. So absolutely right. You need diverse thinking. And if you're not using those people's creative ideas, then you're leaving a lot on the table.
Yeah.
A lot on the table.
Yeah. And what are some of the ways that you use to encourage people to build diverse teams when they're doing this work?
Well, you basically have to, it's basically the best practice, right? And the best practice in design thinking when you're running a team or when you're doing a workshop, mm-hmm. you're actually working on solving a problem. It's proven now beyond any doubt, right? That you are supposed to bring in people for the value they bring as a diverse mindset. So you can pre-select people. So it depends on the workshop you're running. So let's say you're running a very specific workshop that you want to recreate a kitchen utensil or whatever, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then you go out and be very specific on who you bring in to be part of the group setting. For example, there was a case, the company OXO design, they wanted to design their entire kitchen utensil line. And in that group, they invited everywhere from a grandmother to a 6-7-year-old, because mm-hmm. they wanted to observe how she used, they wanted to literally observe, take pictures of how she uses utensils. So in that regard, you have to be selective, a little bit selective. Now, if you use something called journey mapping, all right, so let's say you're a huge company trying to solve how to improve customer service. In journey mapping, you create this gigantic journey maps that are usually can take half a room or multiple walls. And literally you follow the customers, the customer experience from the beginning, right, all the way to the end. And then when you map all that out, you get different mindsets to do that. And then at the end of the process, you open it up to anybody and everybody that wants to come in, look at those journey maps, right?
Mm-hmm.
And their task is to come up with creative ideas at those points where the customer is not having a good feeling about it. So when you're doing a journey map, every interaction you map it as a good moment and a bad moment, right?
Mm-hmm.
Points of truth. So at that point, you bring everybody. You can bring, anybody that's part of the company. It doesn't matter. The key is to have more brains, more different brains, and each one will come up with an idea. And that's the beauty of it, that it's proven beyond a doubt that it works. So there's no reason why you not want to do it.
Yeah. And that bringing it back to CEOs and new ways of leading companies, conversations with as many employees as possible. The more people that you talk to about what's needed, and it's almost like leadership needs to pretend that they're beginners and they really don't know.
Exactly. You know, absolutely right. I mean, companies that are so committed to this, like SAP, oh God, I'm drawing blank on names right now, but they literally have, you know, innovation emissaries, right? They have brown lunches where they get to know each other. They get to know their, you know, the way that they think, right? So they start getting an inventory of what, you know, what people are thinking, how they're thinking, and they leverage those. You know, they do brown lunches where they say, okay, you undressed, next week talk about cycling, right? I like cycling, right? Why don't you tell us about cycling, right? The next week, you know, Jane might say, hey, tell me about what you think about leadership. And that way people start getting to know each other and sort of cataloging each other's skill sets beyond what's being done at work. Right.
So, yeah. So you also broaden your understanding of everyone, yes. who they are. You're getting a much more complete picture. And I think that's one challenge that we have in organizations, is that there's a tendency for leadership to see employees as fairly one-dimensional.
Absolutely right. Yes. Absolutely right. You know, and I benchmark different cultures, because I worked with European cultures. I worked with Latin American cultures. I worked with the Chinese. My last engagement was 3 years working with the Chinese. Mm. And it's very fascinating how each culture interprets leadership and deploys leadership. But there's one consistent failure in every leader that I've seen. Right? I call it failure, call it a lack of understanding. But one of them is hubris. Right? That's a big one. Consistently across cultures, you have people that think they're better than they are, or they think that they know everything. That is just very detrimental to basically a company and people in the company. You know, the expression is people leave, they don't leave companies, they leave management, or they leave other people. They leave bad managers. It's very true.
Yeah.
They leave bad managers, right? So if you can arrest yourself, the hubris, by understanding that you may not have all the answers, and all the answers are very near you, very nearby. if you just let people offer them up and give them the space to do it, right?
Yeah.
And the other one is, confirmation bias. You know, a lot of people, and there's a lot of neuroscience in this. I read a lot of neuroscience. So I kind of try to bring some neuroscience into this.
Yep.
This idea that you know, you're benchmarking, you're using other people to confirm what you already want to believe.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And there's this tendency to want to create teams of people just like you are.
Exactly. Yes.
So it's really, you know, there's, and that's why it's great that there's some best practices for how to step out of that, so that it's actually asking, you know, if you look around and your team looks just like you, same age, same sex, same race, same cultural backgrounds, same educational backgrounds.
Yep.
You're going to get the same answers.
Exactly.
If you want different answers, you want to make sure that you're mixing those things up.
Absolutely right. Absolutely right. I mean, the beauty, going back to why I'm such a passionate believer in this design thinking is because, you know, when you think about it, if you were telling people, I value what you're saying, I value your ideas, and I, people just, you know, they free themselves up, right?
Yeah.
And not, you don't just come up with different answers. You come up with answers that can be, because design thinking is a lot about what's next. You know, it's about redesigning that kitchen utensil that's going to be more, the better, right? Is about coming up with the next car, right? Or the next Tesla, right? Mm-hmm. So when you do these things, you come up with an amazing amount of really cool potential new businesses, right? So people start thinking, what they call anticipatory, right? You start thinking, oh, you know, trying to anticipate the future a little bit, which is something that any CEO, you know, God, would want, I would imagine, right?
Right.
So there's that aspect of it too. So, it, you know, start changing the mindset to be more forward-looking.
Right. And there's both the opportunity to anticipate the future and create the future.
Yes. Yes. Because, you know, and this is not specific to design thinking, but one of the innovation best practices is there's many tools to do it, but one of them is called kill your future, right? Mm. So if you put design thinkers and everybody, right, you do a brainstorm and say, okay, guys, today we're just going to kill our company, right? It's interesting that Jeff Bezos talks about, you should think about Amazon as being out of business in 10 years from now, something like that. I don't know if he's doing that anymore, but he used to do that. And it's interesting because your mindset changes. So, well, let's figure out ways that our company could fail, right? And it gives you, it's amazing, the little exercise, how people that have already been kind of primed, you know, to think in different ways will come up with crazy ideas and how your business could get killed. One of them could be a pandemic, you know, and then how do you get ready, you know, how do you get ready for a pandemic, right? So, So I agree with you.
And it's like, it's really getting outside the box, really thinking some far out radical thoughts. And then because the thing is, it's much easier to think of really out of this world thoughts and bring it in to what you can, like, you can create or do at this point. But it's really hard to start doing something and then expand it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because you get in that mindset of this is what we're doing. And it's so hard to see opportunities. Whereas if it's like, yeah, kill the company. What are all the different ways that our company could be killed? That we would go out of business.
Okay, yeah.
Now what can we do to prevent it? And then, okay, then what if we took those and then we wanna be, you know, where we wanna be in 10 years. Now let's work through all of those.
Exactly. Yeah, absolutely right. So, yeah, and to kind of build on what you said, yeah, the whole concept of outside in, right? Absolutely, as mm-hmm. opposed to inside out,
right?
It's to me, it's the supreme arrogance to think that anymore, right? In the old days, maybe not so much, but now that there's so much information, there's so much digital disruption out there, to think that you have all the answers right from the get-go, it doesn't make any sense to me. Now, instead, you know, go outside. Bring all the knowledge from people and try to see where they're going, and where their lives are migrating to. Bring that in and then start incubating some ideas. I absolutely agree. That's the model to follow.
Yeah. Because you're right. It's to think that there's nothing that can disrupt us, that we've got all the answers and we know where we'll be in 10 years and we've got the plan and we've got all the right people and we're doing all the right things, is, you know, you look back the last even 5 years and you look and you go, look at look at where things are. And as you said, look at the pandemic now and what.
Yeah, exactly. You know, if, for example, if one example I always like to cite is Blockbuster back in the day, right? Well, we actually, I'm dating myself here, but
I remember that.
Yeah, where you actually had to go in a store, a retail store, and rent a movie or rent a, you know, VHS or whatever CD.
Yep.
But Blockbuster, they were so arrogant, right? So arrogant because they were dominating the market. And they completely missed the Netflix. I mean, they.
Yep. Oh, yeah. I remember that.
Yeah. And they completely missed Netflix. They thought, no, that's not going to happen. So they failed to understand. And this is failed to understand the implications of what digital could do to them. You know, they just thought, oh, Netflix is just a mail order thing. Don't worry about it. Mm-hmm. But they forgot to make the further analysis that, you know, that move meant that there was another distribution mechanism was being born through the internet.
Yep.
And the mail order would actually migrate to the internet digitally.
Yeah.
And by the time they you know, tried to figure it out, it was too late.
Yeah. There's a question that's always asked, that's not always asked, and that probably we should be asking more, is what business are you really in?
Yes. Oh yeah. That's a powerful one.
You know, because when you think about, oh, I'm in the business of delivering this product, of selling this product. No, that's not really. And if that's what you really believe, that really limits your ability to expand.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yep. Absolutely. I think that's a very powerful statement, because you're right. If you say, you know, we make cars, instead of saying, you know, we provide transportation for people to have great experiences, right? For people to, yeah. So it's a very, very different goal, a very different way of thinking.
And it makes you look at things different, because if you're making cars, yes, you're going to make good cars, but if it's, as you said, we're providing transportation for people to have great experiences, you've just broadened you can provide and how you're going to provide it. Because it's one thing to do it to provide people with the opportunity to have great experiences,
mm-hmm.
Versus just moving people from point A to point B.
Yeah, exactly. So broadening your, and also, you know, something that's not really been, well, maybe it's been talked about, I don't know, maybe you know better than I do, but the role of CEO, I think that needs to be redefined. I mean, to me, CEO has been so focused on, on execution as opposed to, or maybe not, maybe I'm wrong, but supposedly CEOs are supposed to be the visionaries and plan the next, you know, the next evolution of the company, right?
Right.
But sometimes I don't see it that way. I see they're more acting like COOs, right?
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. I agree. They're much more focused on what's our profit margin.
Yes.
And when that's what you're focused on, that's when you cut costs to increase your profit margin.
Exactly.
You do things that really, they save money today and they start to actually kill the company tomorrow.
Exactly. Yep.
And it'd be really interesting if every CEO actually had their almost like their own personal design thinking team created from, you know, like a dozen employees of mm-hmm. different experiences in the organization, not just their C-level leadership team, but taking, you know, the stock, somebody from the mailroom, somebody from
yes.
You know, all of that, and and meet together, you know, quarterly or something for brainstorming to see, okay, where do we want to go? What are we trying to create?
Absolutely right. In fact, companies that are executing really well have what they call, you know, innovation labs, right?
Yep.
And these innovation, which I've been part of forming in a couple of companies, and to me, it's every company should have one. I really do, because then that's where you staff, you know, agile people, design thinkers with different mindsets, empathetic mindsets, artists, neuroscientists, right? You staff them, and people train in different things, organizational behavior, all this other stuff. Mm-hmm. They're very effective, very, very effective. Capital One has one, and they've been ahead of the curve in terms of innovation in most other banks, for example. Mm-hmm.
And as we talk, you know, bringing this back to leadership and leadership mm-hmm. reimagined, for a leader to allow that randomness of thought is a real
yes
transformation for so many leaders, because it really brings in that there's the vulnerability that has to come back in, the empathy. You know, one of the things that I say is that one of the roles of a CEO, one of the roles of a leader, is to get out in front and knock down everything that's in the way and preventing people from doing their job.
Yeah.
Well, you expand that to the organization, and the leader, the CEO, needs support in which path are we taking?
Correct. Right. Right. Yeah, and you know, if you have that flexibility of mind, it's amazing things can happen.
Mm-hmm.
Companies that have companies completely transform themselves. And there was a piece written, an issue of HBR 2013, that talked about how design thinking has become now the strategy, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they cite the case study of Pepsi under the leadership of Indra Nooyi. And it's amazing. She describes the transformation of Pepsi. She took it completely into a design thinking trajectory and did very well during the time she was CEO, because she opened the mind. She opened her mind and basically kind of not forced, but sort of mandated to every manager in Pepsi that they needed to think, be trained on how to use design thinking. And it's a case study that everybody's citing now, you know, the case study that's, you know, apparently people started saying, wow, we really need to start thinking about this, right? So it's proven, it works, and it's just a matter of, you know, people understanding. What I do is, a lot of people that don't understand what it is, I'll do like an hour or half a day workshop, right?
Okay, great.
Yeah, to executives, and I'll say, look, before you understand it, before you implement it, right?
Yeah.
It makes sense to me, you know, because then I love, because I love, that immediately tells people, oh, this is not that crazy of an idea. I know what you're talking about. So yeah, let's do it, you know, kind of thing. Yeah.
Why don't you share with everybody, as we're winding up, why don't you share your contact information so that if somebody wants to reach out to you to talk or do a design thinking workshop, find out more about it, they can reach out to you.
Sure. Thank you for that. My name is Andres Jordan, A-N-D-R-E-S, last name Jordan. My email is Andres, A-N-D-R-E-S, at factor6.net with the number 6. That's my consultancy LLC. And I can also be reached 703. My number is 703-629-1382. That's my mobile, 703-629-1382. And for any international audience that you may have, I'm available on WhatsApp. So.
Great. Great. Well, Andres, this has been fabulous. And
absolutely.
I loved our last conversation. I love this conversation. I love that, you know, because once you expand your mind, you can never go back to where you were.
Exactly. Yeah.
So this is a great way, a design thinking workshop is a great way to expand your mind and open yourself up. And once you open your mind up, you start seeing new possibilities.
Absolutely right. I'm full agreement with you. That's the beauty of the mind, right? The more you expand it, the more it grows and never goes back to the same shape.
Exactly. And yeah. that's a big part of Leadership Reimagined is how do we look at this differently? And this is a great place to start.
Exactly. So, yes. Thank you very much, Jane. I love this conversation. Let's keep it up. And
Yes. Thank you. Thank you, Andres.
Good luck.
Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us this week on Leadership Reimagined. Make sure to visit our website, lovisconsulting.com, to access previous shows and learn more about us.